to the ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and today we are talking all about the brand new Space Marine Codex. Talking of brand new Space Marines, there's also an opportunity for you to win the Chaplain in Terminator armor and Captain with Jump Pack, and we'll be giving details of the giveaway later on in the episode, so stay tuned to find out more. In today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about the lore, a little bit about the background, what our favorite chapters are and why, and we'll also then be breaking some of the rules down bit of an overview of most of the detachments, but then we're going to be doing a bit of a deep dive. We've written 1,000 point lists for two specific detachments, our favorite detachments. And joining me today to help me out with this Astartes extravaganza is my very good friend and returning guest of the podcast, Max. Welcome back to the show, Max.
Hi. Good to be here, Dan. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you on. So Max joined us for an episode, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think probably 3 years ago now.
Goodness, yeah. It was that long time ago. By all means, check the back catalogue. Max joined us for an episode where we talked about Warhammer and mental health and all that jazz, and it was a really good chat. So I thought I'd bring Max on because I have a small announcement, well, a rather large announcement, in fact. So your listeners will notice that we have been quiet and sort of episodes recently have been a little bit kind of sporadic. Life, the universe, and everything has been very busy for me and for Steve as well. So Steve and I had a chat, and we sort of put the podcast on pause for a few months whilst life kind of calmed down a little bit. And Steve has decided to take a little step away from the podcast as my co-host, and you know, focus on his own personal hobby, because you know, doing a podcast, it does take some time. You've got to read all the codexes, you've got to arrange time for recording, you know, then you've got editing and stuff. And going forward, it's I'm kind of branching out, so we'll have a few more different guests on, and we'll be changing the format of the show slightly. But one thing I would do want to say is like a massive, very public thank you to Steve as my sort of co-host. He's been with us from the very start of the podcast, back when 8th edition first launched, and Steve has brought so much like narrative awesomeness to the podcast, and I'm sure listeners will also kind of have enjoyed listening to it as much as I've enjoyed talking to him. So Steve being a fantastic co-host over the past few years, and look forward to seeing what he's doing now that he's got more time to focus on his hobby. And honestly, his like Twitter and Instagram is like absolutely popping off at the moment. He's doing some crazy like Necromunda kind of car chase scenarios at the moment, which is really cool to see. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he's still at TinRacerSteve on Twitter. But anyway, we've got Max back on the show because Max is an Astartes fanboy, aren't you, Max?
Of a particular bent, I would say now.
Your Astartes have slightly more horns, don't they? Tell your soul, or
something's happened to them. Absolutely. 9th edition, I got rid of the Imperium good boys and purchased a Night Lord's army. I've fallen, Dan. What can I say?
I shall fetch the heavy flamer. But you were rolling with Raptors kind of through a lot of 8th and 9th, weren't you?
Yeah, 8th edition was when I started up again, and began with some Space Wolves, who were fun, and then moved on to Raptors, but haven't got any Astartes armies at the moment, just the Chaos variant.
Just the Chaos variant. But that's okay. Take your Chaos hat off and put your Loyalist hat back on. It'll be interesting to see whether after this podcast you maybe are inspired to start a new Astartes army.
I've always got opinions, Dan. even if I've got no skin in the game. And that's not
always
Lord's
got time. Opinions of varying levels of value, but you know, opinions nevertheless.
I was going to say, you've gone from supreme hobbyist Steve to casual old me, so
to casual noob with significantly loud opinions.
Absolutely.
One of the things, you know, you said the Raptors and Space Wolves, one of the things that I'm really excited about 10th is the fact that detachments aren't linked to chapter keywords.
Yeah.
There is a rule.
It's a good change.
Oh, 100%. There is a rule in the codex that says only one chapter keyword can be used. So you cannot include units from more than one chapter in your army. Mm-hmm. So you have to have, if you're going to use Rebuta Gilliman, it has to be an Ultramarines army. Now, that's not to say that you can't paint all your dudes red and do a really cool, like a Sanguinaur conversion using Rebuta Gilliman, just, you know, maybe not with wings, whatever. Mm. But that army is, per the rules, Ultramarines. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, that's an absolute converter's dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so flexibility.
Absolutely. Like, hobby flexibility is a massive thing for me, as, especially as someone that's always struggles to like start armies because they're never, like, I never know whether I want to do Sons of Medusa. And actually, that's why I sold my Sons of Medusa or Red Scorpions, because they're really flexible because of unknown, you know, founding fathers or whatever. Founding chapters. Founding fathers. It's not America. I'm like, really like Blood Angels, but oh no, this, that, and the other. Different rules. And that's why I sold my Sons of Medusa. And it's why I've always been drawn to either Blood Angels just because I really like them, but things like Red Scorpions or Minotaurs, where they've got like an unknown founding.
Yeah, yeah, I really like that aspect. I think, you know, a lot of the changes for 10th, to be honest, have been a big hit with me. It's never going to please everybody, is it? But, like, 10th edition's got me playing again, like, you know, every week, like, rolling dice again, you know, regular games. I basically skipped 9th. You know, having a kid and a pandemic didn't help, right? But by the time that I had kind of got a bit of time back, it just passed me by. I couldn't keep up with it. Too many additions, too many rules. The fact that there's been this hard reset and, you know, you can just get straight back into it. All new rules, all new codexes, new structures. It's been brilliant. And yeah, this flexibility with the, what do they call them? Detachments. That's one of my favorite changes with 10th, to be honest. That simplicity with the detachments. Love the fact it's on a double page spread. Limited stratagems, army rules. It's just such a good change in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely concur with all of the above. And in a similar way to you, was much more focused on kind of hobby and narrative projects than actual gaming and getting games in. But I've just attended my first 40k tournament, which is probably a chat for another day, but like 2 days, 5 games. Absolutely stoked to get involved in that and really, really looking forward to playing more games more regularly. And get into more events. So I've already signed up for Throne of Skulls in December, and just got to decide on which arm to bring now.
You'll have to stop at mine for a practice game on the way.
Absolutely, you do live conveniently close to Warhammer World, Max. So I will definitely take you up on that. Right. So you mentioned there chapter specific kind of detachments, and I mentioned that they're not chapter specific. Yeah. What do we think the future has? Do you think there's going to be chapter-specific codex? I mean, there's obviously going to be chapter-specific codexes in the future. What do we think? Are there going to be chapter-specific detachments?
I could see that happening. We're in a funny position. Like, you've obviously had a good look through them too, but there are particular detachments which suit some of the non-codex-compliant chapters really, really well. Like the White Scars-esque one. What's that one called?
The Stormlance Task Force.
Yeah, so that is Advance and Charge, really, really good. And then the enhancements that they have are only applicable to mounted keyword units. So that's only the Chaplain on Bike, isn't it, in the Codex?
Yeah. So 50% of them are mounted. So two of them are for unmounted, two of them for mounted. So Furious. In fact, we will break down the detachments but absolutely, like, mounted models, that does scream White Scars, are the only character that is currently mounted in the kind of vanilla Space Marine book as you say, the Chaplain.
But then Space Wolves, I think, don't quote me, can still take Wolf Lord on Thunder Wolf, and obviously they can take Chaplain on Bike as well. So there is a lot of detachments in the new Codex that also suit the non-Codex compliant chapters as well, which is why potentially I'm thinking there might not be, you know, Space Wolves detachment in the future, but who knows? Who knows? How does it work at the moment with the Space Wolves? They have additional rules, don't they? Or they can take some additional rules if you use their index.
Well, yeah, it's in a weird position because this is a great example. Is when you load up the 40k app to create an army, and if you click, I'm going to create a Blood Angels army, it gives you the choice to use Strike Force. Yeah. Or whatever the
Blood Angels one.
The Blood Angels one is called. Now, clearly, the Blood Angels one is a chapter specific detachment, so it makes sense that we're going to see it. It would just be a shame if, like, for me, the fact that the vanilla Space Marine Codex has got this kind of good foundation, and in the actual Codex book itself, all the detachments have pictures, and like, for example, the Gladius Strike Force has pictures of Ultramarines. The Anvil Siege Force has pictures of Imperial Force. So,
yeah,
like you say, very clearly themed, but flexibility. And I really like that flexibility, and it would be a shame to lose that flexibility. But at the same time, lore-driven narrative rules are absolutely my bag. So if there is a Deathwing detachment for the Dark Angels Codex, that's super, super cool.
Yeah.
It's just, like, that's really cool. Love that for Dark Angels players. There is a little part of me that's like, well, why can't I use that as, like, the first company, like, a Bloodwing? Like, why can't I run, like, an all-Terminator Blood Angels army using that detachment? And I suppose the answer is you can. Like, in narrative games, why not?
Yeah,
and I agree. And that's the thing with 40K. It is ultimately a sandbox. It is a framework for you to play your games within. And in some environments, a match play tournament at Warhammer World, you're not going to be able to bring that list. But when you and I play, if I turn up with my Dark Angels Codex, but with a bunch of models painted red in Terminator armor, you're not going to say, Dan, I'm not playing you.
Mm. Well, it depends.
Well, so that was a very non-committal, very briefly there, Max.
Depends what mood I'm in, Dan.
Well, that's fair.
No, I'll bring
chocolate biscuits.
Yeah, oh, well, there we go then. There is a lot of rules in the new book, right? But what I like is that you only ever have to look at one double page spread. At the time, you've just got this little chocolate box of options, and you know, if you've got a big collection, you can play seven. There's seven detachments, isn't there, including the index one? Seven or six? There's a lot. You can play
seven.
Seven completely different lists, completely different play styles, and there's just so much utility and variety. I think that's really cool. I think they've done that really well. You know, my friend plays, who I play a lot, has a Tyranids army. And one of the things that he's been enjoying since their Codex drop is just trying out all the different options. And it's really, really cool. Really exciting time for it.
Absolutely. Talking of chapters, in the kind of lore section of the book, it's broken down in a very similar way. You know, by the time you hear this, you've probably got the book in your hands. But broken down in a very similar way, you know, lore at the front. Broken up between some, you know, color pictures of armies. You've got the narrative rules there, the kind of combat patrol rules, and then goes into kind of the main rules with detachment rules at the front, and then into the data sheets. Now, one point to note for the book is that there is one page on each chapter, including the variant chapters. So things like Blood Angels, Space Wolves, Dark Angels all get a shout out and get a little A4 page in the book. Ultramarines, traditionally in Space Marine Codexes, get like a massive, you know, like 4-6 page splurge. And then other First Founding chapters get like one page. The only additional thing that Ultramarines really get in this book is there's a page about the chapter themselves, and then there is a page about their returned Primarch. So that's really cool, because yes, Ultramarines are kind of like the poster boys for Space Marines and kind of 40k in general. But it is really cool to see that they're not kind of like massively pushed in the book, and that maybe that will see like new players not feel as kind of like pressured or drawn to
obligated.
Yeah.
Obligated to paint their boys blue.
Absolutely. You just paint them red with yellow helmets, put jump packs on them, you know, just like cool people do. So talking of your First Founding chapters, Max, what is your, of all the nine original legions and the First Founding chapters, what's your favorite?
Oh, you see, you've just had 2 minutes of, isn't it good that they're not pushing Ultramarines?
No, you do you, mate. You do you.
My favorite Founding chapter is got to be the Ultramarines, I think.
Oh, Discord. You know, hey Siri, how do I kick someone on Discord?
But you've read No Fear, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I was on the fence with the Ultramarines until I read that book, and I was like, okay, they're not the generic vanilla good guys. They are pretty badass, actually.
Absolutely and agree.
When Gilliman is fighting the word bearers, you know, in the void without his helmet on the side of the spaceship, literally
just like punching bros,
punching heads in, it's like, okay, this is very, very cool. And that changed something in how I view the Ultramarines, I think, that book. So well done, Dan Abner, you did a very good job.
100%
my mind there.
Absolutely agree on that, Max. So very much the same opinion. You know, Ultramarines, a bit Mary Sue. I had a small Ultramarines detachment attached to my Legions army. I had like a drop pod for a Stern Guard, but that was just because the rules were very, very good.
but reading
that, absolutely, right? Yeah, I went through therapy to get out of that first stage of my life. So absolutely agree. Very similar position to you. Wasn't hugely fussed about Ultramarines. And in fact, was almost more negatively minded towards them. Reading No Fear, you know, Mark of Kalth, reading any, that's the problem with Heresy books. Like, even Space Wolves, which I'm just not hugely into, you read, like, Prospero Burns, and you're just like,
oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah, and, like, I'm a massive Thousand Suns fanboy, so, like...
It's the problem with Black Library in general, Dan. The whole reason I've got a Night Lord's army is... because of Black Library books.
Yeah, between Dan Abnett and ADB, I wonder how many armies they've started, those two men, with their books.
If I get into a book, it's just like, right, okay, yep, I'm buying that army, it's happening.
Oh, 100%. I'm reading Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive at the moment, and have you read it?
No, but it's on my list.
It's so good, and it's very, like, Stormcast Eternals in Age of Sigmar, kind of very reminiscent of kind of like the form of magic that exists in that book. And it's just, I'm not sure, I'd have to look it up, but there's going to be a Kickstarter game version of the Stormlight Archive, or a bunch of miniatures made. I don't know.
Miniatures come in, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's just got me super excited. It's just such, and I'm at the end of the third book at the moment, and like the big final battle's just happened. And there are some massive like crowning moments of awesome in it. And it's so cool how books like literature can really like get you enthused for hobby projects.
Who's your favorite First Founding chapter?
It's got to be Blood Angels for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool.
Reasons why?
Just because like they're kind of these like iconic, beautiful role models, and like I see myself as a bit of an iconic, beautiful role model. You know, like chiseled from marble.
Sanguinius is a very cool Primarch, though.
He is very cool. Cool Heresy story. Like, I've just, like, this year just moved into a new house, and I'm going to get, I found a high definition version of the, you know, Horus for the Emperor with Sanguinius lying at Horus's feet, like a high definition image of a file of that, and I'm going to get it printed out on like, you know, nice
good
paper,
good quality paper
with a bit of grain to it, and get it framed and stick it up in my hobby room, because it's such a cool picture.
Amazing.
And even like the original black and white sketch of that, you know, I remember seeing that in like a White Dwarf or something, and then it then got redone, didn't it? And it's just, you know, there's that like original diorama in Warhammer World again, which I remember seeing in like a White Dwarf, and you can see it when you go around the museum.
It's
for me,
the whole Renaissance vibe I really like with Blood Angels. So it's, you know, really, really cool aesthetic. You know, the what's that elite unit?
Sanguinary Guard.
They're straight out of like an oil painting.
Oh, 100%. It reminds me of all my favorite paintings. Like when you go around the Louvre or something, it reminds me of like all my favorite like epic kind of classical mythological oil paintings that are like the size of a lorry that you see up, you know, just like you're like yes. And like massively into my kind of like Greek and Roman mythology, and I know, you know, the Ultramarines kind of really channel that kind of Roman legionary kind of vibe. For me, the Blood Angels more, I think, channel that kind of Greek
more individual heroes,
absolutely,
myth and definitely.
And for me as a hobbyist as well, I like variety. My like hobby / literal ADHD bouncing between various projects and things. I like the fact that I can paint gold armor. Uh-huh. I like the fact that I can paint black armor. I like the fact that I can paint red armor, and they're all of the same army. Uh-huh. You know, a cohesive basing. Red's a very striking color. Uh-huh. And also, one thing I'm a big fan of, I like different colored helmets. I like armies with separate my Sons of Medusa, you know, green army with white helmets, really cool, loved that. Yeah. But like you know, yellow helmets for assault marines, you know, blue helmets for devastators, you know, it's just something that really calls to me, you know.
Yeah, ultramarines have it too.
They've got red helmets for sergeants, don't they, and
white helmets
for vets.
That's right. yeah yeah
But that's not as pervasive, is it? It's not like
no.
Yeah, stop trying to Ultramarines fanboy. Let me have my moment in the light. Thank you very much, Max.
You enjoy your Blood Angels.
Enjoy your Blood Angels. Right. Cool. So there's also a 4-page feature on successor chapters. And there is a subsequent 2-page feature on unknown foundings. And for me, this is quite controversial because it's got some chapters in there, like the Red Scorpions and like the Minotaurs, who are kind of famously of unknown heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Not every chapter can successfully trace its lineage directly back to one of the Primarchs. Over the millennia, records have been lost, destroyed, tampered with, or concealed. For some chapters, being ignorant of this part of their history is a source of immense frustration, and they take great pains to learn anything they can of their Brotherhood's origins, waging entire wars for even rumors of fragments of information. Others care little. They believe it is their task to defeat and kill the Emperor's foes, and that knowing or recovering lost parts of their history contributes little to the successful fulfillment of their purpose. Rumors often abound around these chapters regardless, as some demonstrate the traits of certain first founding chapters more than others, or even exhibit the characteristics of more than one equally. Just kind of hold that thought there, like rumors often abound, right?
Mm-hmm.
These unknown founding chapters cannot experience the brotherhood often found between chapters descended from the same Primarch. Their alliances are therefore necessarily one on merit rather than relation, and the mystery that surrounds them sees them deemed suspect to some who might otherwise call them friend. Interesting. And I know the Minotaurs, Red Scorpions, have kind of got a bit of a kind of controversial vibe. Nonetheless, they're loyal chapters of the Adeptus Astartes, and they fight furiously for the Imperium. So that's really interesting, because like they could have used the line here of like some chapters are recorded to have come from other chapters. However, using that kind of standard like 40k kind of like get out clause, or like however the records and history of the Imperium are like, you know, half of what you hear is a lie, half of which is you made up, the other half is propaganda, and the other half is, you know, whatever, lost to the myths of time. It's talking there, rumors often bound around these chapters regardless, as some demonstrate the traits of certain first founding chapters. However, look at the Exorcists,
mm-hmm.
right? They are, like, this is retconning stuff. Like, they are Imperial Fist lineage. I have White Dwarf 462, April 2021. They ran like a, let me grab it, Index Astartes article, like a...
Yeah.
8 to 10 page article all about the Exorcists. And on page 49 of that White Dwarf, Gene Seed, the Exorcists trace the genetic lineage to Rogal Dorn, the Primarch of the Imperial Fists. And echoes of Dorn's legendary resolve can certainly be seen in the incorruptible nature of the chapter's warriors. Yet, like so many details of the heritage and identity, the Exorcists give no outward signs of this bloodline.
What do you think that is? Do you think that's oversight, or do you think that's...
You never know with GW. It could just be they've employed someone who doesn't know the law as much as they should. You've got to think it's like, it's not just one. So Black Dragons, Salamanders, there is literally a Warcom article about them. You know, when they released the new Age of Sigmar Dragons,
mm-hmm.
there's literally a Warcom article that says it was like, when is a dragon not a dragon? And it listed a bunch of things like, oh, like, this is fire dragons, this is void dragons, you know, et cetera, dragon ogres. And it says, it's got a picture of a black dragon, successors of the salamanders, the black dragon, the dragons trace their origins to the cursed founding.
Clues in the name there.
Well, yeah, and that's also backed up. Do you remember the first founding book that came out, like the big hardback kind of dark blue book? I think it came out at the start of 9th. Kind of like coffee table kind of lore book with nice pictures and lore in it. Storm Giants and Black Dragons are both listed in on the Salamanders page. Fire Lords, again, Black Library book suggests that they're Imperial Fists. It's just a very weird thing, like a very weird thing to like retcon like so much of it,
because it doesn't, if it is a change that they're genuinely wanting to make, I can't see what they're lining up with that.
No.
Like what's the big bomb that's going to drop that just feels like an oversight, doesn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, and I suppose like maybe the get out clause is like rumors often abound around these chapters, regardless, as some demonstrate traits of the certain first founding. But like the lore in the Exorcist article literally says these don't show the traits. However, this is where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's just weird. But yeah, just an interesting point to note. So, Max, what is your favourite successor chapter of known or unknown lineage?
Can I have two?
Can you have two?
Or can we just? Can you help me pick?
Okay, well, why don't you tell us what your two choices are, and we can decide why.
Okay,
why are your favorites?
Slightly newer lore and more recent addition would be Emperor Spears.
Okay, yeah.
So Ultramarines successor chapter, I believe.
Yeah.
Stuck in the Imperium Nihilus, you know, generational war with this kind of chaos system. They're just a very cool chapter, and it's a very cool book. They're kind of quite barbarian and not exactly codex compliant, which I think is interesting for a Ultramarine successor.
Yeah.
Just, and it's just a very good book. If you've not read it, I recommend it.
Another ADB classic.
Another ADB classic, yeah, yeah. And the perspective in that book as well, it's kind of told through the eyes of a human, like, assistant for this space marine who comes from the, you know, the not messed up side of the Imperium to kind of investigate what's happened with them. And it's just very, very good. And I really like how the Emperor Spears are portrayed in that. And it's a really nice color scheme as well. If I was...
Oh, it's kind of like baby blue, isn't it?
Yeah, ocean blue. Yeah,
ocean blue. No.
Baby blue.
Yeah. It's baby blue, like a Fiat 500.
Yeah, but like cool, you know, what's the plumes on the helmets and stuff?
Oh, yeah, like Roman plumes. And also white helmets, different colored helmets.
Exactly.
I'm sold, mate. I'm sold.
But yeah, if I was going to do another Space Marines army, I'd be very, very tempted to do Emperor Spears.
Cool.
I think. And then, yeah, my other choice when I was struggling to decide this was very, very old lore, but very, very cool. Really speaks to me in terms of what the whole aesthetic of 40K is, and that is Black Templars.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the new boys on the block versus one of the classics.
What is it you like about Black Templars?
Oh, the characters.
Yeah.
The models. The whole... I think for any Space Marine chapter, they capture the whole idea of the good guys are not that good, actually. You know, they are literal fanatics, and I really like that. Yeah, because the Ultramarines, you could almost get away with thinking, oh, these are the ultimate good guys, right? But I think the Black Templars do a very good job of showing that darker side of the Imperium, and I really think that's good. And the whole, you know, crusading knight aesthetic, and of all of the new Primaris models, I think the releases that have come out for Black Templars are up there in terms of the best.
They are.
That Empress
Stunning
Champion.
Stunning model, aren't they? Oh,
yeah.
So good.
Yeah,
so good.
Brilliant. The Sword Brethren Sword, just everything. They've really nailed the new Black Templar models, I think.
And,
very, very excited for what they might do for, you know, like new Space Wolves or...
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like for me, the variant chapters of the first founding are the best, you know, like it's the bloody, like if I was going to pick a second first founding chapter, it would be Dark Angels, I think.
Cool. Yeah.
And again, like the kind of different color schemes with the Raven Wing, the Death Wing, and the kind of Greed Wing, or whatever you call it. You know, hooded heads, robes, very cool. And exactly the same, like massive fan of Black Templars, had a Black Templars army back in the day. You know, like many editions ago, as you well know, as we were at university together, like literally wrote my dissertation on the Crusades. So I quite like that. And I quite like that kind of trope. Stunning models, great lore. Another excellent book by Aaron Dembski-Bowden. This is not an ADB fan cast, but he seems to be coming up quite a lot. He writes some good books about Space Marines and all other stuff. But they're very cool. So if you had to put one in order, you know, if you had to pick one,
I think
if I was holding
I think that
a bolt pistol to your head.
Yeah, that discussion's done it. It's got to be Black Templars.
Good
Emperor Spears are very, very cool. I'll be interested to see. I hope ADB's working on some new books for them, because I'd love to see where they go.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just can't beat the collective lore of the Black Templars and the model range. And yeah, I think it's got to be them.
So I'm going to also pick a new one and an old one. And my new one is just a kind of like a side one. And that's the Sons of the Phoenix.
Okay.
So they've kind of got like a white scheme, but with like a purple shoulder pad and arm and mm-hmm. gold trim. Mm-hmm. Their lore snippet in this podcast reads, "Faithful to the Emperor and ritualistic in their battle cant, the Sons of the Phoenix pride themselves on plunging into the flames of battle. Their crusades are so impressive and spectacle, they pave the way for the Imperial creed to spread, and hence are followed by a great many holy men and women. Chapter fleet scattered by the opening of the Great Rift, and now the Sons of the Phoenix crusade to gather their forces back as one." So, yeah, similar kind of like fanatic, yeah. Crusade-y kind of vibes, but also covered in candles. Love it. Like, and like the Black Templars have got kind of candles on their backpacks, right? Some of the Sons of Phoenix models, like, yeah, just get it.
Candles are not surviving a battle, are they?
No, they're 40k candles. I reckon they've got maybe like a mini stasis field around them.
Okay.
So like they're running full pelt, you know, like assault intercessors leaping into battle with like a little candle just cracking on. Or maybe they're just like little LED ones, you know, like those tea lights you get.
Oh, that'd be so naff. Maybe they're those joke candles that when you blow them out, they just light up again.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just love that. I love like, you know, a Chaos Space Marine standing over the body of a fallen Sons of Phoenix, and the candles are still alight, and he's like, you know, I've killed you, but the ultimate disrespect is to blow out your candles. And he blows them all out, and he turns his back, and they all come back on again. That's absolutely that is now 40k canon lore done.
I love it.
So I think that's really cool. I think it would make a really cool army.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being followed by a great many holy men and women, you could do some real kind of like fanatic Astra Militarum.
Imperial weirdos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. With like across the kind of Inquisition space, you know, like Repentia, that kind of thing. What are those walkers called? The
Penitent Engines?
Those ones, Penitent Engines, really cool. And also maybe like using like Cordor models or Redemptionists from Necromunda as like your kind of core guard. That's really cool. It's a cool little hobby idea. I'm never going to do it because it's a massive hobby investment for like just an idea, but it's just a cool idea. A
lot of green stuff candles.
Well, green stuff / 3D printed.
Okay.
Take it to an official GW event. Oh, those 3D printed. No, I've green stuffed these individual candles, I promise you. I've just bought a lot of Black Templars backpacks off eBay. And there's also like suspicious rumors that Cole, when he made the Belisarius Cole, when he made the Ultima Founding, he may have dipped into forbidden gene seed and potentially used elements of word bearers.
That's not a good idea.
Ritualistic, plunging into the flames of battle, super kind of religious fervor. You know, like that's kind of screaming a little bit of word bearers, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. If they invite you over for coffee, don't listen to a word they say.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you're gonna get plasma pistol to the face like that poor ultramarine on the at the start of Marker Gav. So that's my new one. Cool. My old one. Basically pick any Badab War chapter. Like I can't like maybe Sons of Medusa, but then maybe Red Scorpions. I'd love to do an Astral Claws army, but like Primarisified, like Mantis Warriors, what a cool scheme.
Now in 8th edition, I did Raptors.
You did? Another Badab War chapter? And in fact, Exorcists are up there, which as we all well know, are an Imperial Fist successor.
So I did Raptors because they're easy to paint.
yeah, Death Guard Green Spray.
And exactly, Death Guard Green, Akrax Earthshade, Dry Brush done. And I just wanted to get a lot of stuff done very, very quickly, play a lot of games, a lot of different units. I don't actually like their lore that much. They're kind of, you know, army men, aren't they? Sneaky army men.
Yeah.
But there are some cool ones in there. Sons of Medusa. I loved your Sons of Medusa army. That was very cool. With that
I'll read you, I'll read you the lore for the Raptors in the book. So, believed to have been founded from initiates training on deliverance at the time of the Istvan V disaster, the Raptors are an ancient and well-respected chapter. They prize skilled marksmanship and independent thought and view the Codex Astartes as a highly effective set of guidelines rather than absolute doctrine. That's cool. The Raptors are known for fielding substantial 10th Company assets supported by waves of combat skimmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all right. They're all right. But my 8th edition list did not have that. They had waves of assault centurions.
Yeah, no doubt. But to be fair, very similar for me. Like Sons of Medusa, like love the scheme. And again, like I painted some of them green. I painted some of them in their traditional like 2nd edition camo or like Rogue Trader camo thing. And I did, I started painting up a Dreadnought in red. In fact, no, I had a Derridaea. I think I painted that. Did I paint that in red or green? I can't remember. But anyway, like you very.
You did your Phobos guys in like.
Did my Phobos in the camo for sure.
Yeah.
I think that. I was going to paint the Dreadnought red, but I think I just finished it up quickly for a tournament. But anyway, like I like that kind of variant of, you know, I basically like compartmented kind of sections of armies. That's cool. But actually, like lore wise, they're a bit like the whole Iron Hands kind of bloodline is just a bit like they're a bit kind of like
one dimensional.
Yeah, that kind of like we are cold and calculating, and it's the same for Admech. Yeah. Love Admech and Mechanicum, really cool. But it's the whole like emotion is bad, therefore we are so logical. Like that is just not me. Like no. As a human,
no.
Like, that's not us as a human, but also that's definitely not me. Like, yeah, so it's hard to relate to. So I think I do like the more the ones with more human foibles.
Mm-hmm.
I like those ones more.
Yeah, so, the flaws, like the Blood Angels, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. The flaw with a capital F. So Sons of Medusa, the Sons of Medusa are utterly ruthless and share the Iron Hand's reliance on the power of the machine and an intolerance for weakness of flesh. The chapter's unorthodox organizational doctrine sees its companies divided between three war clans and is notable for its furious aggression, large-scale use of armor transports, and thundering armor spearheads. But it drives deep into enemy lines.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. They're basically, there's so many. Oh, look, Covenant Fire. You're basically, you've just got like.
If
you're,
I mean, like, you can do whatever you want, can't you?
Yeah, and there's so much out there. Like, so I'm just looking at Covenant Fire. They have, their shoulder pad is a book with a flame on it. Like, you know, just, you could just build them and you just use the Heresy Forge World Wordbearer pads.
Yeah.
Like, that's you done. And there's so many cool third party, you know, like Dark Krakens. When there were a kind of White Dwarf chapter or a chapter that was kind of made and sold via the White Dwarf kind of campaign series, and they're kind of black with purple shoulder pads and arms. Cool, like, you know, cool. Like, they're very, like, famous for kind of, like, fighting underwater and stuff. There's a transfer sheet that came out of the White Dwarf, but, like, obviously that's now on eBay for, like, silly money.
Yeah,
you just
yeah.
get like, third party. You can print your own transfers.
Yeah, I think Minotaurs would be really good fun to do.
I think they would be really cool. And again, like, lots of opportunity to draw the kind of, like Stormcast, you know, Stormcast Eternal Shields and spears and stuff like that.
So much you do. They had that really epic Forge World model, didn't they, for the Chapter Master?
Oh, yeah, Culm. But they, but Reborn.
Yeah.
He was a like, wasn't he like a Leviathan Dreadnought?
They had a Dreadnought model, but they had like a foot slogging Chapter Master model as well, and they were just so cool.
Yeah, really cool. So the foot slogging Chapter Master model, I want to say, was later then brought out as a
for the Minotaurs. Yeah.
No, I am thinking of Red. I'm conflating too.
Well, we have been talking about both.
Yes.
Because because Red Scorpions are the ones that are mentioned in the new decks, right? As having a non.
Oh, what's his name? Moloch or something?
Yes. Something like that.
Like, oh yeah, it kind of 300 vibes. Came as a pair with one as a chaplain, one as a chapter master.
Mm-hmm. It
was very good. Really cool. Really cool. Yeah.
And you know what? Like, the thing is, all these chapters, like, we must have mentioned dozens now, right? They can all slot into the new detachment system, and you could like represent how that chapter operates quite happily, because you've kind of got a bit of everything, right? You know, there's the melee focused stuff, there's the shooty stuff, there's the, you know, vehicles things. There's just like, that's one of the best things about this new book, is that opportunity to, like, you could get a lot of power out of the detachments and build very, very strong lists, but you can also build very kind of themed lists around them as well, which I think is really cool.
I think that's absolutely spot on, and an excellent segue onto the rules, Max. Well done. yeah, better at this than me. Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, we talked there about, like, let's say the Sons of Medusa, you know, yes, very Iron Handsy, very lots of like you know, armored vehicles. However, you know, they did have a really cool kind of scout scheme in Rogue Trader, and you could just use the, like, for example, the Vanguard spearhead, which is kind of sold as like the Raven Guardy one.
Mm-hmm.
You could just use that to represent the Phobos elements of Sons of Medusa, in the same way that you can use like the Iron Storm spearhead, which is kind of sold as the Iron Hands. You can do that as like your Like Greenwing, you know, or something like that. The Dark Angels, like loads of like predators and rhinos with dudes and land raiders. So yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the rules, Max. So Oath of Moment. Oath of Moment has changed.
I'm glad. Yeah.
You're glad that it's changed?
I'm very glad it's changed. It was look, I'm happy that they had it while they had it, but you know, I'm sure a lot of Marine players had a lot of fun pointing at and deleting a unit every single turn. But it was a bit much for me.
Yeah.
Having played against it, it was you know, having said, oh, we're gonna get rid of rerolls, or we're gonna reduce rerolls. Oh, here's reroll. It was like having a mobile 8th edition Gilliman every single turn. Just reroll hits, reroll wounds. It was, yeah. I don't think it was a good rule at launch. I'm glad they've changed it.
So just comparing the old and new. So the old version is at the start of your command phase, you select one unit from your opponent's army until the start of your next command phase. Each time a model from your army with this ability makes an attack that targets that enemy unit. So an attack, not a shooting or assault, just an attack. Mm-hmm. You can reroll the hit and reroll the wound roll. Mm-hmm. Not pick one or the other, just mm-hmm. pick both, just have both. So the new one is exactly the same, but only to hit.
Yeah, that's right. And then certain units interact with that, like I think it's Stern Guard can reroll their wound rolls of one against the Oath of Moment target. So that makes Stern Guard a little bit better, and it interacts with Oath of Moment quite nicely. One of the new detachments as well, the First Company Task Force, they have their detachment rule is extremist level threat, and that means that once per game you get old Oath of Moment rules. Basically, you can reroll your wound rolls against the Oath target. So they've given, I think, a much needed nerf to it, because it was too powerful. I think not, you know, it wasn't like game breaking, because it's not like Marines have been running away with it in the tournament scene and stuff. It just wasn't much of a fun. It just wasn't a fun rule to play against, I don't think. But they've, you know, opened it up so that it's a bit more playable for the opponent, and you've also got some fun interactions with some of the new units and detachments as well, which I think is a good thing, to be honest.
Oh yeah, for sure. And this is a rule that exists across any yeah. Adeptus Astartes army.
They all get that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's still like that's still really powerful.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's
yeah.
an awesome rule, and like I like it because, you know, from a fluff perspective, I you know, that's what the Space Marines would do, right? They would assess the battlefield. You can just like imagine the captain like take that down, and like everybody just like switches guns to it and just efficiently blams it away, and then they move on to the next target, and I like
with surgical precision.
Yeah, exactly. It's very cool. Just needs to be turned down a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. So what we're going to do is we're not going to break down all of the of the detachments. We'll let you do that in your own time. I'll quickly just blast through them and kind of what they are, and then we have written a little 1,000 point force for one of the detachments each, and we'll talk a little bit about those in more detail. Max has just covered off the First Company Task Force. The picture of that is Templars, but I think that is probably the most like vanilla of one of them mm-hmm. all. And basically, it's a kind of veterans, Stern Guard-y kind of focused one, which gives you that once per battle old Oath of Moment for a turn. So then sort of starting from the top, you've got the Gladius Task Force, Ultramarines kind of vibe, and that gives you the combat doctrines that you'll be familiar with from the kind of index rules.
So that kind of rolling tactical flexibility, isn't it? Which is cool.
Yeah. Cool. Like, lore-wise, cool. I don't really like that, because I don't like the kind of choice and the admin of it. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather just have an army that does one thing all the time rather than be like, oh, do I want dev? Do I want tactical? Do I want assault?
That. I used to like that granularity back when I was playing three times a week and, you know, no kid, and had the time to like dedicate to this. But now, yeah, nowadays I just want like point click.
Easy mode. So, and then the next one is the Anvil Siege Force. So kind of sold as like the Imperial Fists. Like the picture there is of like Gravis Marines as well. Mm-hmm. So the rule there is ranged weapons equipped by Adeptus Astartes models from your army have the heavy ability.
Every weapon gets it.
So it gives your weapons heavy.
Yeah.
If such a weapon already has this ability, each time an attack is made with that weapon, if the attacking model's unit remains stationary this turn, add one to wound.
Which is good.
Everything is heavy.
Everything is heavy, so everything standing still gets plus one to hit, which is nice. I really like one of the enhancements in here, Fleet Commander. So it's like you call down an orbital strike. And
oh, that's cool.
The turn after, you draw like a line between the point you dropped and another, and everything within a straight line is like... Like the, what was that weapon in Command and Conquer? The satellite that the GDI used to call down. And... Remember that?
No, but...
Or maybe it was Nod. I can't remember. One of them had it. Anyway, and it was very cool.
Nod have an... It's called Orbital Strike.
Was it really?
It was called Orbital Strike. What was that Orbital Strike weapon?
So that's good. I don't like this one so much just because of all the games of 10th that I've played so far. If you don't get out into the middle of the board and start grabbing those middle objectives, like you're gonna lose. And I reckon standing still and shooting isn't the best way to play 10th edition at the moment.
No, I think the game, you know, it is an objectives game.
Mm-hmm.
I think mobility is key. The ability, especially if you're playing like tactical objectives where you're scrolling two objectives per turn, like the ability to be able to reach out to far flung objectives. You know, if your opponent, if you draw a tempting target, mm-hmm. and your opponent's like, yeah, come and get this one over in no man's land, mm-hmm. and you're like, well,
I've built my list around.
I've built, I suppose the cutback to that is, if you're going to build your list around heavy intercessors, you don't do tactical objectives. You do fixed,
and you'd be like, right, I'm going to bring it down. And
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. That's true. Very true.
Yeah, I quite like the Architect of War enhancement, which allows you to, when the bearer is leading a unit, range weapons equipped by models in that unit have the Ignores Cover ability.
That's good. Yeah, because, oh gosh, cover is everywhere now, which is awesome. Like, it's quite easy to get cover, so anything that increases AP or removes cover is really powerful at the minute, I think. And gives a lot of added power to your units. So that's a good one, actually, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, next one, we've got the Iron Storm Spearhead, sold as a kind of Iron Handsy one, mm-hmm. Very kind of vehicle-focused. And the detachment rule for this one is Armored Wrath. Once per phase, for each Adeptus Astartes unit in your army, you can reroll one hit, one wound, or one damage roll made for a model in that unit. So it's hit, wound, or damage, you can do each one. I think that was the old Iron Hands chapter tactic or something very similar.
I think it was like the Salamanders used to have that one, actually. Like, it was...
did they?
And Eldar as well. And then when they did the Build Your Own chapters in 8th, and I can't remember if they had those in 9th as well. It was like Master Artisans or something.
That's right. Yeah. And then there's like a bunch of enhancement that's, you know, for example, like give you feel no pain or give like, oh, this is a good one. Tech Marine model only. When a friendly Adeptus Astartes vehicle model is within 6 inches of the bearer, weapons equipped by that vehicle model has lethal hits abilities.
Yeah.
I think that's probably got, that's got the ability to be a bit abused somehow. I'm not sure how, but
the enhancements in this one, they're kind of like stick it on a tech marine and then they give stuff to vehicles, isn't it? I liked the Adept of the Omnissiah, which lets you like blank the incoming damage from a single failed save. So I don't know if like a horrible damage, a tau railgun gets through, you can just be like, nope, damage zero.
Oh yeah,
that one.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's that. Well, so again, like just like we were saying, like these are kind of flexible. So yeah, 50% of the enhancements are for tech marines, mm-hmm. and it kind of is suggesting like this is for vehicles. But the other two, one just like Adeptus Astartes models only, the bearer has feel no pain 4+,
mm-hmm.
And the other one is Adeptus Astartes model only, not a tech marine, but whilst a friendly vehicle is within 6 that of that bearer, the vehicle unit is eligible to shoot even if it fell back or advanced. Mm-hmm. So they're not all tech marine, and then even not all vehicles, but it does kind of, I don't see how you're taking this and not like pushing the vehicle vibes.
Yeah, Yeah.
Unless you really want Field of Brain. The one after is the Firestorm Assault Force, which we will talk about in a minute. Mm-hmm. The one after is Stormlance Task Force. Again, I'll talk about that one. And then finally, the Vanguard Spearhead. So very Phobos orientated. And you know, again, two of the enhancements are focused on Phobos. You've got a Raven Guard picture. It's that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And Detachment Rule is Shadow Masters. Each time a ranged attack targets an Adeptus Astartes unit from your army, unless the attacking model is within 12 inches, subtract one from the hit roll, and the target has the benefit of cover against the attack.
I think this is one of those funny ones where the detachment rule doesn't necessarily gel with the kind of theme of the detachment.
Okay.
Because if you're taking like Phobos heavy Raven Guard, they're going to be like up in the middle of the board, scout moving or infiltrating or deep striking, and I think the times when they're actually going to be more than 12 away is going to be quite rare. But if you were taking something like loads of heavy intercessors and tanks sitting in the backfield with minus one to shoot, and the benefit of cover is actually really strong and really powerful. But this one reminds me a bit of when I used to play Raven Guard in late 8th edition.
Okay.
And there's loads of... So where this does lean into Phobos and stuff is there's loads of, like, tricksy move, double move, fall back from charges kind of shenanigans you can do. Loads of move stuff, which I think from an objective game would be really powerful. You know, for a skilled player who's really studied this and got their strats sorted, I think they could get a lot of tactical, do some really cool stuff with this, actually. But then you're also going to have a load of non-kind of Raven Guard units in the back that are really benefiting from the fact that you've got minus one to hit from outside 12 and the benefit of cover. And let's see, one of the enhancements, the Blade Driven Deep allows the bearer to infiltrate along with a unit of infantry. So you could infiltrate 10 Deathwing Knights into the middle of the board. Awesome. And if you took it with, Dark Angels or, I don't know, Logan Grimnar and a load of Wolfguard Terminators or something.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what, you know, like when I used to deep strike Assault Centurions and move them up and they'd be like 4 inches away from the... I see what they're going for here, but I think it doesn't, of all the detachments, I think this has got a really powerful one, but I think it doesn't quite speak to the chapter that it was kind of modeled on, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's like something like the Blade Driven Deep, really cool thing, and it has the ability to do some pretty impressive like quirks or some like gimmicks. But as you know, as more codexes come out, especially things that play with infiltrators, then I think you're going to see maybe like the utility of that detachment potentially drop.
But it's a good one. I like Shadow War Veteran, which is just like you can like vect, you know, agents of vect an enemy strat, so like just turn off a stratagem, which is really powerful. I hate playing against those kinds of tactics.
Oh yeah, because increases the stratagem cost by one, doesn't it?
Yeah, particularly now because there's so few stratagems and the the amount of CP you have.
Oh yeah, people aren't starting with like 12 CP.
Which I love. I think it's a great change, but it just means that, you know, getting that key strat off at that important time is so, so crucial. And anything that can stop that is nasty.
Yeah, especially if your opponent's like saving that CP, they're like, "Oh, I'm gonna, I'm not."
It up.
Oh no, something like an interrupt, you know, like a close combat, you know, assault phase interrupt.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the actual stratagem's called, but like it costs 2 CP. Your opponent doesn't spend 2 whole CP for the whole of their turn, or the whole of your turn, whatever, so that they can interrupt the combat or whatever it might be, and then they say, right, cool, I'm gonna keep this 2 CP and do the interrupt thing, and then you say, no, it costs 3 CP.
Feels bad.
Oh, in fact, oh, here we go. So that once per battle, after your opponent uses a stratagem, the bearer can use this enhancement if it does until the end of that battle increase that stratagem's cost to your opponent by 1 speed. So you can't actually, you can't gotcha someone on it, to be fair.
Okay.
You can't like, someone can't say, I'm going to use the stratagem, and you can't say, haha, no, because it now costs 3 CP. You tell them it costs CP after they've done it for the first time.
Oh, I wonder if that's because the Swarm Lord in Tyranids has a similar ability. I wonder if it's because we are seeing a lot of like replicated abilities, aren't we, across, which is good. You know, but like the do a stratagem for 0 CP thing, lots of units have got that ability. So I wonder if it's just like a straight copy of that potentially.
So let's just compare the wordings of that. So the Swarm Lord's rule is malign presence. Mm-hmm. Once per battle, after your opponent uses a stratagem, if this model is your warlord and is on the battlefield, you can use this ability. If it does, until the end of the battle, increase that stratagem's cost to your opponent by 1 CP.
So it's after they've used it.
Yeah.
So they get to use it for the base cost.
Yeah.
And then every time after and that, you say, it's one more.
As of now, anytime you use it, it's going to cost an extra CP. Yeah. So my kind of whole idea of like, haha, you're going to gotcha them, ignore that. But but yeah, very, very similar. Once per battle, it's on a Phobos model, but it doesn't have to be a Warlord. So yeah, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Max, tell us all about the Firestorm Assault Force and your list.
Okay, so I've picked this one as my favorite. I think it's probably got the... Well, it's on paper, it's the most powerful looking one. So the Firestorm Assault Force has the detachment rule Close Range Eradication, which grants assault to all of your ranged weapons and an additional +1 strength to those weapons if your target is within 12 inches. So get close.
Ouch.
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 Yeah, exactly. And then the enhancements are less good on this one, I think, but the stratagems are where it really shines. But one enhancement I do quite like is Champion of Humanity. It can only go on a Tacticus model, which is, I think that's the new keyword for Primaris, right? Or similar. I think it's just like Primaris, but not in Gravis armor or something. But this one gives the bonus of allowing the unit that they're leading to ignore any and all modifiers to their characteristics and any roll or test made for them, excluding saves. So it doesn't ignore AP, obviously, but it ignores modifiers to hit, or it ignores like movement modifiers. There's a really annoying Tyranid. You can tell I've played a lot of Tyranids recently. There's a really annoying Tyranid unit that reduces your movement. So I think
Barbed Gaunts.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah. This one, ignore any or all modifiers to their characteristics. So it'd be like, all right, screw you, Barbed Gaunts. I quite like this one. It's Trajan Valoras in my Custodes has got a very similar ability. So that one's quite good. But it's the stratagems where it really, really kicks in. So I picked three of my favorites here. We've got Crucible of Battle, which is a battle tactic stratagem, and that gives one of your units +1 to wound against the closest eligible target within 6 inches. So get close and really mess people up. And it also works in melee, which is really nice as well. And then Burning Vengeance, which is another battle tactic stratagem, and that allows you to disembark a unit from a transport after an enemy unit has resolved its tax against that transport. So someone shoots at your Land Raider, you can pop this strat, the guys can get out and immediately return fire, which is hilarious. I love it. It's like, you scratched my car. What you did? Have some bullets.
Love it.
And anything that's like free movement on your opponent's turn is really cool. One of my favorite things in the new edition is the Rapid Ingress strat. You know, just one of the like basic stratagems that everybody gets, which allows you to like deep strike in your opponent's turn. I love that.
Yeah.
I use that so many times. So anything that is like movement in your opponent's turn is awesome. Anything that's like extra shooting is really good. And then the final one I've picked out is Immolation Protocols. Again,
so cool.
Another battle tactic strat. And this one means that in your shooting phase, it gives all of your units' torrent weapons the Devastating Wounds ability, which is horrific. Like,
imagine that on like six Flamestorm Gauntlet aggressors.
Six aggressors with this ability. however many D6 auto hits, you're rolling all, oh god, it's just terrifying. Yeah, a terrifying strat. And the fact that all three of those are battle tactic stratagems, I think, is quite important, because correct me if I'm wrong, but a recent change they made in the latest balance update was for those kind of captain abilities, that means you can use a stratagem for free. That only now applies to battle tactic stratagems, I think. I think all of the other stratagem categories, it doesn't allow you to use them on anymore. I know this because in my custodies, my fights first ability, I can't do that for free anymore. But the fact that these three are battle tactics, I think, means that if you have captains attached to these units, then the captains can proc these stratagems for zero CP, which is really, really powerful.
Yeah, okay. So this is from the autumn 2023 balance data slate. Modifying a stratagem CP cost. Rules that modify the CP cost of a stratagem when you target a particular unit can only do so for a stratagem that targets multiple units if every unit you target has the same ability to modify the CP of that stratagem. Rules that modify the CP cost of a stratagem, but that do not specify the name of the stratagem, can only be used to affect the CP cost of battle tactic stratagems.
There you go.
This does not apply to the Aircast Colossus, Strider Colossus, or Towering Wraith Construct abilities.
So very powerful.
Yeah, so example one, a captain's rights of battle ability enables the model to be targeted by stratagem for zero CP. Ability does not specify, specifically name a stratagem, and so it can only be used as a battle on a battle tactic stratagem for zero CP. Azumon's tactical acumen ability, however, enables you to target this model's unit with the Fire Overwatch stratagem for zero CP. As the name for stratagem is specified, that ability can be used even though Fire Overwatch is a strategic ploy stratagem.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the most powerful leader abilities, that ability, you know, that option to use a stratagem for zero CP, even if it's been used on another unit that phase, really good. And the fact that the three super strong stratagems from Firestorm Assault Force all fall within that battle tactic stratagem category, I think is really good. Really, really powerful.
Okay, so interestingly, the second example and that first paragraph about modifying the cost of CP refers to named things. So a Calidus Assassin's Reign of Confusion ability, when used, increases the cost of one of your opponent's stratagem by one CP. This ability does not specifically name a stratagem, and so it can only be used to increase the CP cost of a battle tactic stratagem. So let's just double check the Close Combat Interrupt stratagem.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a battle tactic?
Ooh, let's have a look. Counter offensive
is a strategic ploy.
2 CP strategic ploy. Yeah.
Oh, so like basically everything we said there about that Raven Guard, the Oh, what you could do is you could wait until someone use it and then deploy it. Like, A, no, that's not the rule. And B, that's a strategic ploy, so you can't do that anyway.
I knew I didn't like that detachment for a reason, Dan.
Yeah, there we go. So we were our answer was right. Our working out was wrong.
It's too intelligent for us these days. I just, you know, Phil, Impulsor with Flamey Boys, drive up, get out, burn.
Perfect.
That's about as much as I can.
So tell us about your list. What 1,000-point list have you written?
Yes, you set me the task of 1,000 points, which is difficult because I have to.
You want to get all your toys in, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I've really gone with a theme here, and I'm trying to lean on what I think the strength of this detachment is, but also just thinking about the games of 10th that I've played so far and how important it is to kind of grab that mid board. Because, you know, if you're, it's like there's always like one objective in your deployment zone, right?
Yeah.
Three in no man's land and then like one in your opponent's.
So yeah, and if you've got hidden supplies, sometimes it's four, right?
Yeah. And grabbing those middle objectives is really, really important. So I have gone for a captain in Gravis armor as my warlord and one of my leaders. A Primaris captain just in Mark 10 armor or whatever mark it is, you know, just a bog standard Primaris captain. And that is to get the rites of battle ability. So I can get those stratagems off for zero CP. And then for dedicated transports, I've got two impulses. And the really important thing with impulses is their assault vehicle ability. So units that are in an impulsor can disembark after hit is advanced, and they count as having made a normal move, but they cannot declare a charge. But I mean, when you're getting out and shooting, who cares about charging? So in the two impulsors, I'm going to put 2 5-man Inferno squads, and one of them would have the Primaris captain attached to them. So the whole thing there is advance up onto a middle objective. The impulsor can kind of sit there and hold that. Jump out your Infernus guys, do some flaming, buffed up by one of those stratagems, and, you know, really, really hurt the whoever you're pointing at, really. Because their guns are strength 5, which is decent. But then if you're getting out close enough, you're going to be looking at strength 6, which is wounding, you know, a lot of non-Astartes infantry on 2s, which is really, really powerful. And if you pop something like Crucible of Battle on there, you get another +1 to wounds. So it's really kind of overlapping all of the detachment buffs. And then the final thing, this is like where I've thrown, let's see. Yeah, I've chucked almost half my points at this final piece, is a Land Raider. Filled with 6 aggressors. Although, if I took 6 aggressors, I wouldn't be able to take... No, so it would have to be 5 aggressors. Ooh, with
the... You're paying the 6-man points for 5 dudes.
Yeah, that's true. So, but then I can attach the captain in there. Because I think the Land Raider can only transport 6 Gravis models.
Okay.
So it's take 1 less aggressor and put the captain in so that you can get the stratagems. And he's also a bit of a beat stick.
And he's in Gravis armor himself, isn't it? So it looks cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think at 1,000 points, paying that extra point for the aggressor you're not taking to put them in a Land Raider, which has assault ramp, so you can get out, shoot, and charge as well. And they've changed aggressors' power fists now, haven't they? I think they're twin-linked now. And they are also weapon skill 3+, as opposed to 4+, which they were pre-Codex. So aggressors have got better in combat as well. But the whole shtick of this list is advance into the middle, hold the middle objectives with your vehicles, and then obliterate whatever's in front of you with flame with the rest of it. And you've obviously got some good anti-infantry with all the flamers, with the Land Raider, and you can chuck a load of missiles on the impulsors. You've got a little bit of anti-tank. You've got a bit of anti-tank with the aggressors with their power fists. So I thought, you know, it's obviously very all my eggs in one basket, but I think it could counter quite a few different threats at 1,000 points.
I obviously love it because it's very heavily themed. What made you go for a Land Raider with the Godhammer pattern las cannons rather than embracing the flamey theme and going for the Redeemer?
Yeah, I think just having that little bit of anti-tank in there, just because stuff is such high toughness now. You know, you come up against a monster or another vehicle, another tank. I just think you need that +10 strength weaponry in your list. Otherwise, it's just going to be something that you just can't, you know, you can't even tickle it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what chapter? So this is, you know, lots of flames suggest salamanders, but you've said you're not a huge fan of salamanders. Oh, that's me projecting my own lack of fanness towards salamanders. You haven't specifically mentioned that you like salamanders, I should say.
Yeah, they're okay. If I was doing this as a hobby project, and I think it would be a lot of fun, I would do Tyrannic War Ultramarine Veterans.
Okay.
So I would model them as like a, you know, purge force.
Yeah.
So really battered up armor, lots and lots of like missing limbs, very battle damaged, very grim and grubby, and, you know, they have been like clearing Tyranids with flame for years and years and years. And I would like really lean into that. I think you could do some cool stuff with the vehicles, like get some like Hive Tyrant trophies on there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're like, you know, so they're like monster hunting Tyranid purges is how I would model this up.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Or can I make a suggestion?
You can.
What other chapter that you said you're a big fan of is very good at purging with flame in Holy Righteous Fire?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I just think
it would be cool. Like Black, I can imagine, because Black Templars, in fact, were the first Primaris unit to
get the Pyroblasters.
To get the Pyroblasters.
Yeah. They were indeed. Yeah. Yeah. Depends what flavor you're going for.
Yeah.
I think I like the lore that they've dropped with 10th. And the whole, you know, the new Tyranid threat.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's very kind of on theme for the 10th edition, isn't it? That kind of Tyranid
war. And
I think
it would be an opportunity to hobby and model a chapter which is normally, well, you know, obviously very codex compliant, very by the book. It would be an opportunity to kind of model them on the edge a little bit. And they are, you know, they've got trophies on their vehicles because they're sick of this now. And, you know, they are like battered and like patched together armor. I think you could do some really cool stuff with it.
Yeah, actually, Tyrannic War veterans as a theme, really cool. Love those old models. I had a mate convert me up a librarian with like the head of a Tyranid warrior on his banner pole. And there was this really cool, maybe was it Jez Goodwin? This really cool, like, old bit of art, which was like a Space Marines, an Ultramarines librarian, like basically like linked up to the head of a Tyranid Hive Tyrant, like plugged into the Matrix, as it were. so you can like access the Hive Mind. Yeah, really cool. Really cool. So love that. Love that little, like the rules are cool. And love that there's a kind of like really solid kind of foundation in the lore.
Imagine that, you know, someone shoots at my Land Raider, right? I'm going to pop Burning Vengeance. My aggressors are going to get out and flame you for your audacity. It's just, yeah, there's a lot of fun things I think you could do with this. I think it really stands out as one of the strongest and probably most fun to play detachments. So yeah, it jumped out to me.
Talking of jumps, I'll get onto mine, shall I? So this is the Stormlance Task Force, and the detachment rule, I love it. So Lightning Assault. The warriors of a Stormlance Task Force employ high-speed tactics and hit-and-run warfare. They do battle on the move, wrong-footing the enemies with breakneck maneuvers and melting away in one moment only to crash home like a thunderbolt the next. So the image here is a bunch of White Scars Outriders, mm-hmm. and this is obviously meant to be the White Scars bike one, but I actually went for a slightly kind of touched on bikes, but also went for this is Blood Angels, right?
Yeah.
And the new Assault Intercessors are out. They're really cool models. And I thought, what a great way to kind of get those in the army. Mm-hmm. So you start off with a captain with jump pack, and he leads 10 Assault Intercessors with jump packs. Oh, and, oh, in fact, sorry, I haven't even, I've just read the lore for the, like, the background for Lightning, so I haven't actually told you what the rule is. So I was just too excited to talk about dudes with jump packs. So Adeptus Astartes units for your armies are eligible to declare a charge in a turn in which they advanced or fell back. So the whole theme for this is speed. And so I've
immediate threat range. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then going back to what we're talking about getting moving about the battle space as quickly as possible. So Captain Jump Pack, 85 points. He leads 10 Assault Intercessors with jump packs for 170 points. And then I've got a chaplain on a bike, 75 points. He leads a squad of 6 Outriders for 190 points. I've put in an Invader ATV in there as well for another 70 points. And I've put a Storm Speeder Thunderstrike. I've got enough points for any of the three Storm Speeder mm-hmm. variants. I just kind of went mm-hmm. for the Thunderstrike because I like the rockets on top. Mm-hmm. And then the last unit. So this is interesting. So the last unit is a squad of Death Company Intercessors for 170 points. That takes the total to 960 points.
Yeah.
I've also got two enhancements. Portents of Wisdom for 15 points, which goes on the captain, and that allows me to reroll advance rolls, which I think is really important given that they can charge off in advance.
Yeah.
And the chaplain on the bike has got Fury of the Storm, which makes him pretty badass. So Improve the strength and armor penetration characteristics of the bearer's melee weapons by one each time the bearer ends a charge move. Until the end of that turn, improve the strength and armor penetration characteristics of the bearer's melee weapons by two instead.
Oh, that's really good. So what's the chaplain's base strength with his Crozius? Six or something, I'm guessing? I haven't had a look. What would it be?
So his Crozius is, base strength six.
So you to go get... to, on the charge, you're wounding like marine equivalents on two
on
plus,
twos.
Which is really good. Yeah, that's really good.
At AP3 as well.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So five
Fury
attacks.
Fury of the Storm sounds like
Fury of the Storm.
Dragon Force song as well.
Absolutely. It's just, that's your theme tune. You just imagine him like blasting that from his Space Marine bike.
I like that. I think that's really good. I tell you what I think is really underrated as well is Fall Back and Charge.
Oh, 100%.
Like Advance and Charge is very obvious why that's good. But Fall Back and Charge, the ability to like proc fights first again is so helpful because, of course, the way that fight priority works now is after the fight's first step, you know, it would be your opponent would then get to swing
pick
back.
First.
So if your dudes were still in combat from the previous turn, then whoever they were still in combat with would be attacking them. But the fact that they can fall back and charge, that's really good. Yeah.
And he also combos well. So Catechism of Fire. So each time this model's unit selects to shoot, you can select one enemy unit within 12 inches and visible to this model until the end of the phase. Ranged weapons equipped by models in this unit, have the devastating wounds ability when targeting that enemy unit. And Litany of Hate, when this model is leading a unit, each time a model in that unit makes a melee attack, add one to the wound roll. So, like Outriders, they're not exactly like the the best thing in since. In combat, but like the Starseer's Chainsaw, adding one to
wounds. Oh, there's a lot of attacks.
There's a lot of attacks, and also the shooting weapons with that devastating wounds thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not to be sniffed at.
This could be really good with like Ravenwing, couldn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Taking like some Black Knights, or this could be really cool. Or Space Wolves with Thunder Wolves. But no, both of my current armies are very very melee focused. And if I hadn't picked the Firestorm Assault Force, I would have had a play with Storm Lance and thought about what fun you could have with these lists. And I think you've picked a good one there.
Well, so I haven't even finished the list. That's the thing. So we've got to start talking about chaplains on bikes. So you've got a captain with the Assault Intercessors. You've got the chaplain with the bikes. You've then got the Invader IATV and the Storm Speeder. But I've also put in 10 Death Company Intercessors. Now, they're 170 points at the moment, and that takes the total of my list to 960. And the reason I've done that is because I don't want Death Company Intercessors. I want Death Company Assault Intercessors with jump packs.
Yeah.
So I've left 40 points there for as and when the kind of Blood Angels rules come out, I can have a bit of space to kind of put jump packs on these dudes.
Death Company are one of my favorite units.
100%. I kind of want to do a full Death Company army with like Brutalis Dreadnoughts. And like,
that'd be so much fun.
Yeah, really cool. Like big infantry. Little part of me wants to do like them all in drop pods as well.
Yeah.
Just like loads of, foot slogging intercessors jumping out of drop pods. But as we've discussed, this game is a objective game and like you deploy all your drop pods and then suddenly you'll just foot slogging a bunch of infantry around. so you can get onto the objectives. You just can't then get around the board necessarily as quickly as possible. But yeah, I just think I think it's a really cool thematic army. You could drop the Invader.
Outriders, at six Outriders takes quite a lot of chewing through as well.
There's a lot
of wounds in there, right?
Yeah, and you could drop the Invader. So the ATV is 70 points.
Yeah.
A chaplain with a jump pack is 75 points. So again, you could drop the Invader ATV and jump pack chaplain on there. That would just be like the first born one, but they could go with the Death Company Intercessors once they've got packs on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like it.
It's got some cool strats. So until you got one that targets an Adeptus Astartes unit from your army that was selected as a target of one or more of the attacking unit's attacks. So you can reduce the armor penetration characteristic of that attack. So you've got a bunch of infantry and bikes. Yes, they are relatively vulnerable, but you can help reduce the AP of enemy weapons to help them survive a little bit more. You can also give range weapons equipped by models in your unit that have the you can give them assault ability,
mm-hmm.
which means you can shoot them off.
You're going to be advancing a lot, right? Yeah, so
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if the weapons already have assault, they get sustained hit one as well.
It's decent.
Full throttle, pick a mounted or vehicle unit, excluding walkers, until the end of that phase. If your unit advances, do not make an advance roll for it. Instead, until the end of that phase, add 6 to the movement, or 9 if they're mounted. So I can make my bikes.
Your outriders could go, what's their base move, plus 9, and then charge.
Yeah, so 12-inch move normally. So you're talking a 21-inch move plus a charge.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the captain has Portents of Wisdom, which is reroll advance rolls.
Okay.
So you could theoretically put Portents of Wisdom on the chaplain on bikes instead if you didn't want him to be punchy, and you could just reroll roll the dice for the bikes. And then you have your foot dudes automatically advancing 6 because they don't necessarily have the movement of the bikes.
I
think if a unit's got a strength, I think you're worth just doubling down on that strength.
Double down on it, yeah.
Yeah, like make the bikes insane. Like that 21-inch move, like regardless whether you're charging or not, like 21 inches is like, that gets you across the board, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could use it to grab a table quarter. There's a lot of utility there, yeah.
Yeah, and you can I love this. So to be fair, that is 2 CP, so it is an investment.
Okay.
But you can also give reroll charge with a stratagem for 1 CP.
Oh, that's really handy.
So until the end of your turn, you can reroll charge rolls made for the unit, and melee weapons equipped by models in that unit have the lance ability.
Oh, nice. So that's extra strength on the charge, is it? I can't remember how Lance works this edition.
That is weapons with Lance in their profile are known as Lance weapons. Thank you. Thank you, Core Rules. Each time an attack is made with such weapon, if the bearer made a charge move, add 1 to the attack's wound roll.
Oh, nice. So it's just a flat plus 1 to wound. Yeah. Really good then, yeah.
So imagine that on your Fury of the Storm Chaplain on a bike. Anything at toughness 4 or below, he's already really got 2s. Anything at toughness 5, 6, 7,
yeah.
With he's that wounding ability, on 3s, or with his ability, it's 2s.
Yeah. And then anything higher than that, you go from 5s to 4s, which
anything up to strength 50, 50, to like toughness 8, yeah, anything below toughness 8, you're going from 4s to 3s.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm sure the listeners can work out the maths, but like that's good. That's good,
it's
right?
It's really good. Yeah.
I'll especially like with AP3.
Yeah, and stuff is tough to wound this edition. There's a lot of high toughness stuff out there. So
oh yeah, absolutely.
A flat plus 1 to wound is really good.
And then the next two are again another survivability one. So pick a mounted unit or a fly vehicle, and until the end of that phase, each time an attack targets your unit, subtract 1 from the hit roll and subtract 1 from the wound roll. So again, mm-hmm. that's a way to keep my storm speeder alive or my my bikes. And the windswift evasion. So in your opponent's movement phase, which as we've discussed, we love a bit of interrupted stuff, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
So in your opponent's movement phase, just after an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fallback move, you can target 1 Astartes unit from your army that's within 9 inches of that enemy unit, and then you can make a normal move of up to 6 inches.
That's good. So grabbing an objective or blocking off.
Like that, yeah, like that's like second order effect of that. More like, you know, your opponent moves towards you and gets within, in fact, they don't even need to be, they need to be within 9. Let's say they get within like 6, whatever.
Yeah.
Suddenly that's a 12.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, I think that's decent. And yeah, you've just said there, the second order effect, you could then get onto an objective for sure. You know, maybe you put your OC, strong OC units on there or something. But
mm-hmm.
I think that's really good. That's a really good little stratagem. So there we go, that's my little army. So I think that's what I'm going to be working towards. I've got a 1500 point army to build for Throne of Skulls.
Oh, cool. Is that the points for the event then? 1500?
It's only 1500, yeah. And it's also Highlander as well. So I think I might do something around this kind of thing, because it's Highlander, so it means you can only pick one of each war scroll.
Yeah. When data sheet AOS Dan.
Data sheet, of course, yeah.
War scroll. I always think war scroll sounds cooler. When is Serena Scrolls? How long have you got?
That is the first weekend of December.
Oh, so you got time.
Bucket list time. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah,
I'll look forward to seeing it.
Right, so that's a long ramble through the Space Marines Codex. Max, I suppose last question for you before we sign off.
Ooh, okay.
Obviously, we've had a whole bunch of cool new models get released, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Have you got any standout favourites from those ones?
Of the new kits, my favourite GW models are always the ones that are kind of like clean and you can add your own stuff to, and are just a really good base for conversions and that kind of thing. So I love the new jump pack, both the Captain and the Assault Marines. I just think they're such clean, simple models. You could put all sorts of gubbins on those, convert them up. You could do so much with them. So I think they're my standouts.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But yeah, Company Heroes is such a cool...
Oh, they are awesome.
Like, just as models. Like, I don't like squads like that in the game.
No.
Because they're just a bit, like...
Weird?
Well, more like you've got a guy with a heavy bolter, a guy with a sword, yeah. A guy with a stalker bot. Like, it's just kind of...
It takes you a long time just to resolve the attacks.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Really... I like, you know, Primaris units where it's just like, no, you just have 9 of the same gun. Yeah. Yeah, but they would make cool, like, squad sergeants and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah,
as well.
the ancient in there, the champion with the sword, even the heavy bolter guy in that.
The champion with the sword is just like an amazing, like, mm-hmm. squad sergeant for like some intercessors,
blade guard or whatever. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. And I suppose the next question is, what, whether it's a character or a unit or a vehicle, obviously we've seen a lot of kits get primarisified or get new mm-hmm. versions. What do you think? What would you like to see done differently in the future?
I think the way that they have updated Black Templars and kept the aesthetic, but just made it look even more badass. I think if they redid some of the Space Wolves, and if we got like a new Logan Grimnar in Terminator armor, I think they could do some amazing stuff with that now. And
which one's the Santa on? Is that Logan?
Yeah, you can get Logan Grimnar on his sled. Or you can get Logan Grimnar just foot slogging in his Terminator armor.
And... Oh yeah, that was a much, much cooler model.
Yeah. The sled is so funny, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. Isn't it? Yeah.
But I think just seeing what they could do with Space Wolves in the same way that they've refreshed Black Templars, and Logan would be an awesome model for that.
That's cool. So for me, it would have to be, it's the Flyers.
Oh yeah, what, the old Storm Potato?
So I think like a new Storm Raven,
yeah,
for me in particular. So I think the like the Storm Speeders, mm-hmm. really, really cool.
Yeah.
The Storm Talon, I'm not a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. The Storm Hawk, with its sort of wide wings, it's mm-hmm. got a slightly different profile. I prefer that more.
Is the Storm Talon the really kind of dumpy little one?
The Storm Talon is like the kind of Apache gunship-esque one.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And the Storm Raven is like the square one. Neither of them look particularly sleek, you know, whereas if you look at something like the Corvus Blackstar,
that's a cool model.
Like, that's a really cool model.
Well, the Raven Wing have got some cool flyers, but, you know, similar kind of profile, but yeah, they could do something a lot.
Oh yeah, like the Raven Wing Dark Talon.
Yeah, I think they could do.
Yeah, just compare like the Dark Talon in terms of like the Dark Talon, ultimately, that core is very similar to the Storm Cat Talon,
mm-hmm.
but it's just got such a better, like, silhouette.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And the Corvus Blackstar is just badass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, it looks like the dropship from Aliens, which helps as well. But yeah, I just think, like, the Space Marine, like, vanilla Space Marine flyers have just got a bit of a bad kind of, like, it's like, it's just the kind of they were built in a different era.
It's like if I ask my little girl to draw an aeroplane, she would draw something that looked a bit like that, I think.
Looks a little bit better than a Storm Raven, yeah. but yeah, I'd like to see like new Space Marine flyers, like Primaris Space Marine flyers would just be badass, because mm-hmm. you know they'd look awesome.
Definitely.
Talking of new releases, we mentioned a giveaway at the start of the podcast, and if you want to be in with a chance to win a copy of the Chaplain in Terminator armor or Captain with jump pack, then there's two ways you can enter and two ways you can win. So when this episode goes live, we'll be posting an episode post on Instagram. So if you follow us on Instagram, like that post and put a comment on that post, you'll be entered into the draw. And if you head over to YouTube/AOTI40K, subscribe to the channel and stick a comment on the episode video when it goes up, you'll also be entered. So there's two chances to enter. You could potentially even win both, and we'll randomize the winners and randomize which model goes to which winner. And the only thing we ask in return is that once you've painted the models up, slide into our DMs, show us a picture. We'd love to see what you've done with the models. Well, Max, look forward to seeing your Ultramarines Tyranid 1,000-point army at some point in the near future.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Dan. I've really enjoyed it.
No worries. Keep calm and crusade on.